In countries around the world this week, church leaders and Christians of all different denominations are marking the anniversary of the assassination of Salvadoran Archbishop Oscar Arnulfo Romero. Known by people in El Salvador simply as Monsignor, Archbishop Romero was shot dead on March 24, 1980, while saying Mass in the small chapel of a hospital where he lived in the capital, San Salvador. In just 3 years after being appointed to the archdiocese, Romero became an increasingly outspoken opponent of the government and military leadership, making public each week a list of the victims of violence and repression. The day before his assassination, he openly challenged the military leadership in a homily broadcast across the country, urging soldiers not to follow orders and kill or oppress their fellow citizens. Today, throughout Latin America and beyond, Romero is revered as the voice of the voiceless, an inspirational figure for all who struggle to uphold the gospel values of human dignity, justice, and peace.
As his death grew closer, he knew he was going to die. He saw his spiritual director on the very day he died and said he wanted to be clean before he met God.
Former director of the English Catholic aid agency CAFOD, Julian Filikowski is also founder and chair of the Romero Trust, set up to promote greater awareness of the life and legacy of the assassinated Archbishop of San Salvador.
He today represents the essence of the option for the poor. He lived it, and he showed that the words were not some empty rhetoric of the last part of the 20th century, that they were something that could be lived. He was a martyr to the magisterium of the church because his work alongside the poor in support of human rights and social justice was all done on the basis of the gospel and Catholic social teaching, of which he was an expert and which he taught with great vigour and great energy throughout the 3 years he was Archbishop. So the justice and peace movements and reconciliation movements around the world see Oscar Romero as a kind of icon, an icon of holiness, an example. And there's great yearning across the world to see him beatified and canonised, because really we want him as a patron saint of our movements.
You're talking about his option, his preferential option for the poor. Tell us about the situation there today, the challenges facing the church in El Salvador today.
Well, the poor of El Salvador are poor, but the poorest people, or many of the poorest people, have left the country. It's a different economy. It's a different place. There's a huge number of Salvadorans who've emigrated to the United States and also to Mexico and other places nearby. And their remittances from their work, their very poorly paid work usually, is the biggest element in the dollars earned by El Salvador today. So the poor are actually holding the country together financially in that way. And the land question is no longer so acute as it was in Archbishop Romero's time. And it's become a financial centre in some other ways. There has been progress, but the poor are poor and they need a pastor who cares about them. Interestingly, we've recently had a new archbishop in San Salvador, Archbishop Escobar Alas, a young bishop, and who is speaking in a very different language from his predecessor about the poor and about the place the poor have in the life of the church, and his commitment to Archbishop Romero and his beatification.
Was it that first drew you to this cause with such passion? It's become really your life's work at the moment, hasn't it?
Well, I was very committed to human rights work in Latin America. In that work, I was very close to the Society of Jesus, who taught me in my secondary school in Great Britain. And through them, I got to know Archbishop Romero. And it's the greatest grace and privilege of my life to have worked with him. And I feel that his example is just so powerful at this juncture. He really is, hopefully, a saint for the 21st century. I think people admire him. He's used in diaconate training programs as a model. Confirmation classes ask for the material about him because they see him as a soldier for Jesus Christ in the very best sense of that word. And I think for the world around us, to be a Christian leader today, what we're looking for are people who are credible witnesses to the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And Oscar Romero was just utterly credible. He was a great, great witness to Jesus Christ. He was not a secularized bishop. He was not a populist bishop. He was a bishop with an immensely deep spirituality, a life of prayer. He made his decisions in contact with God. But he did it in absolute authentic fulfillment of the social teaching of the church. And as a man, he was loyal and author, as I said, an enthusiastic teacher of the church. But he also saw that the church was not just magister, it was matere magister. And so he was a wonderfully warm, encompassing, inclusive pastor. And he was really the beloved of the people there. And they cried, "We want bishops like Oscar Romero."
He was something of a reluctant leader, though, wasn't he? He didn't really fulfil this role until he was thrust into that position as Archbishop there.
Oh, very much so. He's got a trajectory from his early priesthood where he was a great preacher. He had great oratorical skills. He was a great communicator. He was a journalist. He ran 3 dozen newspapers in different places he was. And he was very firm. And he was very committed to the poor. He gave all his belongings away when he was in San Miguel in the parishes. He used to have breakfast for the shoeshine boys. And he lived very, very simply. But that part was the kind of the hidden life. When he came to San Salvador, first of all, as an ecclesiastical bureaucrat, I think he was very disorientated and he lost his connection with the people at the grassroots. And he became really a very stuffy, haughty, pedantic ecclesiastical bureaucrat. And he was frightened by some of the things happening after the Council of Medellin and Vatican II. Not that he ever disowned them, but I think he had a midlife crisis. So people knew him at that time as someone who was a very defensive person and not someone who was embracing the Vatican II reforms. But we were wrong because the earlier Romero was the right one. So when he came to San Salvador, one has to recognize today, to the great dismay of the clergy and the people, it was a moment when he regained his balance and his equilibrium. He threw away those blue years of famine and became the pastor that he always was. And the killing within 2 weeks of his assuming office of Father Rutilio Grande, his friend, was a moment not of a Damascus moment when he was suddenly swiveled round at 180 degrees. It was a Gethsemane moment where, praying before his body, praying before his friend, he realized if he was to follow through what it would mean for him. And very soon afterwards, he wrote to one of the bishops in Latin America, "I think my new post has put me on the road to Calvary." And that was so prescient. And so he grew into the role. And the old, impatient, slightly nasty bureaucrat. And people, we mustn't airbrush or whitewash that out of the history. There was that period, was gone. And he actually, during his 3 years, went around to many of the communities when he was there. His first thing he did was to apologize for his behavior when he'd been with them before, that he had not lived up to the teaching of the church in the way that he treated them, and he wanted to make up to them. And that readiness to say mea culpa, to be self-critical of himself and of his church in a loyal and immensely committed way, was what made him what he was. And his motto, which was right across his mitre, was sentire come ecclesia, to feel for, to palpitate with the church, taken from St. Ignatius Exercises.
My thanks there to the former director of the English Catholic Aid Agency, CAFOD, Julian Filakowski, who's also the founder and chair of the Romero Trust, set up to promote greater awareness of the life and legacy of the assassinated Archbishop of San Salvador.